welcome back to Women's Wellness Radio, and now in video. So this is our second attempt to do both audio and video. And if you are already listening on audio, you have the option to go check it out on our YouTube channel or on our website. So that's fun. And you can actually see our guest today, dietitian Cassie. If you're watching on video, hi.
Hi.
If you're watching on video and you'd like to subscribe to the audio, you can just hear all our podcasts. We have a weekly podcast. You can hear it from wherever you like. So you can go to your iTunes or whatever device you use and just search Women's Wellness Radio. We should come up and then you can subscribe. So we've got a great episode today, and we really have a diverse array of topics for women's health every week. So go back and see what you've been missing, and we're happy to have you. So, Cassie, welcome.
Hey, Bridget, it's so good to be here. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Really exciting. So let me tell everybody a bit about you. Cassie Bjork, is that how I pronounce it?
Yep.
Okay, great. Also known as Dietitian Cassie, she's a registered licensed dietitian and a health coach and the founder of Healthy Simple Life, a company that helps people find freedom from diets and chronic health conditions through the power of real food. You have a really impressive website and little empire going on there.
Thank you. I know. It's exciting. It started out just as me, just as like the only dietitian. I was working in a hospital and just kind of seeing clients on the side. And what's so awesome is that we just see the real, you know, the healing power of real food every day. And it grew beyond just me. So now I've got other dietitians and personal trainers that work for me that see clients, and we're just able to reach so many more people. So that's actually how Healthy Simple Life was born, because it started out as just Dietitian Cassie. But as I started hiring dietitians, it was kind of like, well, we need to expand beyond just Dietitian Cassie, because I kind of was trying to take myself off the pedestal, so to speak, to highlight how awesome my health coaches are, since it's not just me anymore. So Healthy Simple Life is the company that we see our clients for nutrition and fitness coaching.
Okay, cool. So yeah, your original website was Dietitian Cassie. That's still up.
Yeah.
And then Healthy Simple Life. And I just want to share a few more places that people may have seen you. CBS, Fox News, CNN Health, very impressive. Time, Parade Magazine, The Huffington Post. And you've got a weekly podcast with Jimmy Moore and friends called Low Carb Conversations. I was just on your podcast. Was that last week?
Yeah, it was last week. Yeah. I know. That was so fun.
Yeah, really awesome. And you're locally on TV at Twin Cities Live frequently. Is that right?
Yep, monthly. Yeah.
Monthly. Cool. Right on.
Thank you.
So today we're going to talk about metabolism.
We are. Yeah. A lot of our clients come to us for help with weight loss, and metabolism is just such an interesting topic, because everyone thinks they have a slow metabolism. And a lot of us do. I think the statistics are actually like 99% of people believe they have a slow metabolism. And it might actually be true, because our metabolisms are compromised for there's so many different reasons why they're compromised, especially in this day and age, you know, sitting in front of a computer all day and lack of sleep. And believe it or not, our food choices really impact our metabolism too. So I'm excited to dive into this topic, because it's something that we work with almost all of our clients on. Because even if weight loss isn't a goal, and we'll talk about how metabolism ties into weight loss, but even if weight loss isn't a goal, everyone wants more energy, right? And that's really what metabolism is it's the processes in your body that are giving you energy.
Okay. Right on. And yeah, I feel like people throw around the term that, you know, I have a slow metabolism. And it's like, what? How do you know? Like, what does that even mean? So can we start there? Like, what is metabolism?
So what it is, it's a complex set of chemical reactions inside your body. And it's the process at which we digest food and burn calories and fat. And what it's not is it's not really simple, and it can't be boiled down to a simple equation of calories in, calories out. It can't just be calculated by plugging numbers into an equation. And I think that's where we've gotten confused for quite a few years, is thinking that if we just burn the amount of calories that we consume, then we'll be healthy and lose weight, and that's going to, you know, boost our metabolism. But the problem is, if we don't eat enough, so a lot of times when people are counting calories when they come into our office, or if they're seeing us on Skype or phone for an appointment, they say, okay, I've been counting calories for a long time, and I'm not feeling very good. You know, I lost some weight, then I gained it back when I ate again. And the reason why that's not helpful for your metabolism is because when you're restricting your body of what it needs, your metabolism actually slows down. because your body's really smart and your body's like, ah, she didn't eat for like 8 hours. And I don't know if she's going to do that to me again. So next time she eats, I'm going to hang on to all the food that she eats just in case she goes for another 12 hours without eating. Then I've got these nice fat stores that I can burn as energy.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. So yeah, so starving yourself,
restricting your body
doesn't
of calories,
work.
it doesn't support metabolism. And there's a lot of other factors that, you know, I think a lot of people think that our metabolism just slows down with age. And it does. Our metabolism does slow down with age. But the good thing is there's so many other factors that you can control. So things that impair metabolism include processed foods, simple carbohydrates, sugar, trans fats and refined oils, lack of sleep, chronic inflammation, stress impairs metabolism. And then what enhances metabolism, things like real food and balanced blood sugars, avoiding sugar and artificial sweeteners and getting enough sleep and avoiding those trans fats and getting enough efficient exercise and quality adequate supplementation. So those things can actually speed up your metabolism and make it work better for you.
Okay, so you mentioned age. Can you talk a little bit more about how age, what happens with aging and metabolism? And then yeah, you mentioned processed foods. Are there any other things like we should know and look out for that could be metabolism saboteurs?
Well, I think a big thing that I wanted to make sure we touched on that a lot of people don't think of when it comes to metabolism is gut health. So gut health is kind of a term that people tend to hear it and think that it's just for people with digestive issues. And the fact of the matter is that gut health, that term, covers digestion and absorption of food and the state of your metabolism and well-being. So gut health is really kind of the cornerstone for optimal health, and it's the avenue of which our nutrients are absorbed and assimilated and incorporated into our body. So it's gut health is really associated with all these other processes in your body, including your metabolism. And a lot of people think, you know, gut health, they just think of, you know, maybe the, kind of the unmentionables, the diarrhea and constipation and burping and gas and bloating. And they think, well, you know, if I don't have any of those issues, then I'm probably okay. But the problem is when we have impaired gut health, it ties into our metabolism because impaired gut health causes this chronic inflammation. That's also a term that I mentioned earlier. So I want to come back to that chronic inflammation. What happens with that, and this is kind of scary because with this kind of inflammation, acute inflammation is like you stub your toe. Chronic inflammation is the kind that festers deep inside your body and you can't see it and you can't feel it, and it's associated with almost every disease out there. And it's also associated with your metabolism because when you've got inflammation, your body wants to heal it. That's why if you get a paper cut or if you stub your toe, it's not very long before you're back to normal because your body just does a really good job at healing it. So if you've got this inflammation going on inside of you and you're not focusing on, if you're not doing anything to really kind of counter it and bring it down, then your body is continually focusing on healing this inflammation. And it's why a lot of people don't feel energetic and they feel just kind of chronic fatigue all the time. And they have trouble losing weight because their body is just always focusing on healing that inflammation.
Okay, so you mentioned earlier processed foods, and I'm just trying to think, okay, well, what's getting the gut
so what wreaks havoc on the gut?
Yeah,
the thing that I talked about is like that impair your metabolism. So those refined carbohydrates and processed foods, processed or packaged foods, antibiotics, that's a big one. And, you know, sometimes it's necessary to go on an antibiotic. I would argue that sometimes it's not necessary and we're put on antibiotics anyway. But anytime we're on an antibiotic, we want to make sure we're on a high quality probiotic because antibiotics don't discriminate. They kill the bad bacteria along with the good or the good along with the bad. So we want to make sure we're kind of countering that effect and putting in high quality probiotics in our body. And then chronic stress, chronic infections. What we see with a lot of clients is people are putting things in their body that they're sensitive to. Gluten and dairy are probably the main two food sensitivities that we see. But a lot of people don't realize they're sensitive to them. Because if you've just grown up, you know, drinking milk and eating bread your whole life, and you just happen to have, migraine headaches and kind of bloating and gas after your meals, but you've always been that way, a lot of times people don't realize like what the norm is and how far they're from it when they're just used to certain things happening. And then they think that's just the way they are. And we see that with a lot of clients. They'll come in just saying, I just want to lose weight. And we'll get them on this eating regimen that's so healing their back pain goes away and their migraine headaches go away and their acne goes away. And, you know, they didn't realize that most people don't go to the bathroom 10 times a day. And they thought that was normal because don't talk about their bowel movements.
Yeah.
So it's like all these things start to normalize and they're like, man, I never knew I could feel this good. I never knew I could live life this way. So I think that's what makes me so passionate about talking about this, you know, health and metabolism and gut health and healing and real food, is because there's so many things that people are living with that just aren't helping them live life to the fullest, but they don't really know that life can be any different because they haven't experienced it.
Yeah, I love that you're still so passionate about this. You've been doing this a while. It's awesome.
Yeah, thank you. I kind of went on a tangent there, but
no, I've got a few follow-up questions from all that. So, one is, you can almost think of processed foods as being toxic. You know, they have some toxic additives in them. And one thing I've sort of heard is that sometimes even if you don't eat a lot of calories, you're just storing fat because it's so toxic in your body. Could be from food or could be from bugs in your gut or whatever, that makes you kind of put on weight. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, definitely. And the way that works is basically, so I call it the blood sugar roller coaster. So everything comes back to having stable blood sugar levels. So riding the blood sugar roller coaster, a lot of people are riding this blood sugar roller coaster every day. You know, they have breakfast in the morning and then maybe a couple hours later, they're really hungry. So they have like a banana and then their blood, and then they crash like an hour later and then it's lunchtime. And they're kind of going through these like ups and downs throughout the whole day. And that does not support your metabolism. It throws a couple important hormones out of balance that I'll talk about in a minute. Remind me if I don't get to it. I go on my tangents here and there. So what fuels this blood sugar roller coaster is sugar or carbohydrates, which all carbohydrates turn into sugar in the body. So the second they hit the bloodstream, they're metabolized as sugar. So I'm not saying all carbohydrates are bad. I think that choosing your carbohydrates, the best carbohydrates are going to be real food carbohydrates like veggies and fruits, because you're getting a lot more nutrients and you're getting less chance that you're going to have that blood sugar spike. So all carbohydrates are metabolized as sugar and they fuel that blood sugar roller coaster because they cause a spike in our blood sugar levels, and protein and fat don't. They don't do that. So it's carbohydrates that cause our blood sugar levels to rise. And anything that goes up must come down. So your blood sugars, when you spike them by eating, like if you're talking about processed carbohydrates or even not processed carbohydrates, even eating a banana by itself, that's going to spike your blood sugar levels. And then anything that goes up has to come down. So then they crash. So the more carbs we eat in these short intervals of time, it gives our blood sugar roller coaster the greatest highs and lows. And a lot of people have ended up doing that over the years, especially when fat, ever since the 1970s, when it was really been demonized. And protein, you know, it's kind of hard to overeat protein. And a lot of people aren't focusing on eating protein. I don't think we need to be eating like tons and tons of protein, but I think it is important to eat protein throughout the day because protein can actually increase your metabolism by 35% for 2 to 3 hours after eating it.
Wow.
So protein is something, especially women. I'm like, most of us women just don't think about eating protein. We just kind of, maybe we're eating more fat now since people are realizing that fat is healthy. So maybe we'll grab, you know, some peanut butter with that banana or have some nuts and seeds and things like that. But protein isn't something we're always like thinking of. So that's one tip I would say, try to incorporate protein throughout your day, even if it's like tuna salad or chicken salad or like a dried beef stick or hard boiled eggs, things like that, that are kind of quick portable protein sources. So anyway, back to that blood sugar roller coaster, the two hormones that I foreshadowed are insulin and glucagon. And they're in charge of whether or not you're burning or storing fat. So they have a huge impact on your metabolism. And they can't coexist. It's one or the other. So insulin is often known as your fat storing hormone. So insulin promotes fat storage. When there's too much sugar, or if you eat too many carbohydrates that turn into sugar and it's in your bloodstream, insulin will take it from your bloodstream and carry it to your cells and store it as fat. And insulin's not necessarily just a bad guy. Like, we need insulin. This is why type 2 diabetics that become insulin resistant, because of eating too much sugar and carbohydrates over time, they have to inject insulin, because insulin is important, because it's toxic to just have all this sugar floating around our bloodstream. We got to get rid of it if it's there. So insulin is good in that sense, that it carries that sugar to your cells. But the problem is it's stored as fat. So this is why, you know, this low-fat dieting hasn't really worked for anybody, because when we eat all these carbs, carbs are into sugar and sugar is stored as fat. So it's not fat that makes us fat. It's actually this overconsumption of carbohydrates. So the hormone called glucagon is your fat burning hormone, and that's secreted in response to stable blood sugar levels. So you've either got insulin storing fat or glucagon burning fat. So we actually want glucagon in order to burn that food that we're taking in for energy. And the way that we can do that is keeping our blood sugars nice and stable. And I kind of foreshadowed this too. So the way that you can keep your blood sugar stable is by not by just not eating carbs at all. I think carbs give us energy and they are important. The amount kind of varies from person to person, but I call it PFC. So you're eating protein and fat with your carbohydrate. So every time you're eating a carb, you're having a little bit of protein and a little bit of fat with it just to make it more balanced. And that's going to promote those stable blood sugar levels, which not only promote not only prevent weight gain and promote weight loss, if that's a goal of yours, but also just gives you more energy and makes you feel in control. And then you don't have those sugar cravings. Sugar cravings are a huge thing we see with our clients because when they've been riding that blood sugar roller coaster, anytime you have that crash, your blood sugars are really low and your brain is super smart. And it knows that the quickest thing to raise those blood sugars is sugar. Mm-hmm. So we crave sugar. So it's not even a matter of willpower like a lot of people think it is. Like, I just don't have any willpower. That vending machine calls my name at 2:30 in the afternoon. It's really not about willpower. It's a biochemical response because your brain is smart and it knows that when your blood sugar levels are low, it just needs sugar to raise them. So we can prevent that by kind of staying ahead of our hunger by eating PFC, protein, fat, and carbohydrate throughout the day. Okay. So generally, we recommend having snacks between your meals because then you're not even if you're not having like a super high carbohydrate meal, your blood sugars are still going to drop. So you kind of want to bring them back up a little bit before they get to that really low point. Makes you feel more in control too.
Okay. Yeah, that's helpful. So we have to keep your blood sugar stable. When you have a carbohydrate, have it with fat and protein. And then I want to circle back to the inflammatory foods. And you said gluten and dairy are the top ones and people don't
realize. Yeah, those are the top foods that people are sensitive to. You know, okay. As far as eating gluten and dairy, if you're not sensitive to them, I think it kind of depends. It kind of depends what your goals are. We've seen clients that they don't necessarily have an allergy or sensitivity to dairy, but they find that when they eliminate it, they're able to lose weight a lot quicker. So if weight loss is a goal, then that might be something that you want to consider. And a lot of people don't try that right away because it can be kind of overwhelming, especially because it's more than just like a one day thing. Like we recommend, if you're going to try to see if a food is interfering with reaching your goals, you got to cut it out for 4 to 6 weeks because it can take a lot of time, especially gluten, for that to really get out of your system to find out if it's standing in the way of your goals. So a lot of times people don't try that right off the bat. And I think that's okay. You know, when we first start with a client, we don't usually just like eliminate everything. We kind of start just with the basics and try to get them eating PFC throughout the day. And eliminating those processed foods, I think, is the most important thing. Packaged, processed, baked goods. Because those, they are addicting too. So it's not just like I mentioned, the sugar cravings definitely are results of having those low blood sugar levels, but also sugar is addictive. There's more and more research all the time to support that. So if we're eating foods that are really high in sugar, we continually crave them. So it's also good to try to get those foods out. That said, it's easier said than done. But when you're eating plenty of healthy fat and protein along with your carbohydrates, it's so much easier. I mean, it's amazing. Clients say, I never knew that I could live a day without just thinking about food all day long. Because when you're eating carbohydrates that just turn into sugar, you're basically the sugar burning machine and your body can burn sugar pretty quick. So then your blood sugars are just going up and down. You're thinking about sugar and you're craving sugar all day long. Now, when you're adding in that healthy fat, it keeps you full, and protein that supports your metabolism and keeps you full. You're not going to have the cravings like you did before. And that's pretty empowering because it's not a fun way to live to feel so out of control.
No, I think people just... they're used to it, you know, and they're like, oh, I got to have my coffee. I got to have this. Yeah. And that's why it's so hard to convince them otherwise. They're like, oh, that's how I function.
And I think that's a matter of bringing it back to your goals. You know, for some of our clients, and it's really, really hitting those goals. Like what are your goals and why are you here? Because, I think one of the reasons why our approach is really empowering is like, we don't make people feel shameful. We realize it's your life. You get to live it however you want. But if you're coming to us with the specific goal of not getting type 2 diabetes or, you know, living to see my grandkids or losing 25 pounds or losing 125 pounds, whatever it is, that's important to you. And that's why you came here. So we try to always bring it back to that. So if someone's, you know, we'll say, you know, I'm going to do everything you said, but I'm not going to give up my 3 glasses of wine every evening because I can't, because that's just the one thing that helps me de-stress and I'm not willing to give that up. Mm-hmm. That's okay. We can work with that. The problem might be that if a goal of yours is, if that goal to lose 100 pounds is really important to you, then you might, it might have to decide at some point. You might have to decide what's, you know, can I cut down to 1 glass of wine a night? Then maybe we can get down to 1 glass of wine a week. Maybe eventually we can cut out the alcohol altogether. And I try to never be like that Debbie Downer, because I think the balance in life is really important, and finding what that balance is for you is different than what it might be for other people. But if that goal is so important and losing that weight or living to see those grandkids or whatever it is really important, then I think we really need to drive that home and kind of keep that in mind. And sometimes it's not that important, and that's okay too. You know, sometimes people will say, I just realized that I don't even care about the weight loss. Like, I just want to get a happy hour every night, and that's fine. But I think it's empowering still, even in that sense, to realize, okay, well, that's a decision that you're making, and maybe we can revisit that again at another time. So again, I'm kind of going on a tangent here, but I think it's important no matter what you're going through in life, to just kind of bring it back to, what are my goals? What type of life am I trying to live? And for the most part, we can all feel better when we're doing things that can support our metabolism and energy levels.
Yeah, Cassie, I definitely don't think you'd be a Debbie Downer to work with. I think that's pretty clear. So that's good. And you totally anticipated my follow-up question, which is like, yeah, what do you do when people are like, this is too hard, or I don't, you know, I want to be... You know, often we have friends who have the same eating habits as us and that kind of thing. So, yeah, I mean, for some people, I agree with you. Like, just maybe some people just decide, hey, it's not really worth it to me, actually. I don't really want to work that hard.
Yeah. And I think another thing, too, is making, like, not holding themselves back, because something that we see, too, with a lot of people is they do these like self-sabotaging things that really hold themselves back. And it can be even scary to reach your goals. Like, as weird as that may sound, we see clients deliberately hold off on making healthy changes because they're kind of afraid of reaching these goals that they've so desperately wanted to achieve, which kind of sounds backwards. But I think that why it happens is because if you've struggled with, say, your weight, because we're talking about metabolism, say you've struggled with your weight your whole life and you finally found something for weight loss that works for you, it can be scary to think that, like, this might be it. You know, you might want to stick with the solution for the long haul instead of falling back into like these comforting, unhealthy eating habits. Or, you know, if you've always failed at dieting and this new way of eating isn't actually a diet, it can be kind of scary to find something you love, because then what? So this way of thinking, it's not only normal, but it's pretty common too. So if anyone listening is thinking about that, like, gosh, like, it sounds great, it sounds empowering, but I'm kind of nervous, I don't know how that would work. We hear that from a lot of clients, that they notice that even like people's expectations of them can change as they lose weight. You know, a lot of overweight people kind of enjoy a certain amount of like invisibility in the crowd. And when they're successful with their weight loss, they get a lot of attention, and it can be kind of scary, and it can be more than people are prepared to handle. So you don't have to do it alone, though. I really don't think we're made to go through this life alone. And that's what we're here for. And like my dietitians on staff and I, we love this kind of stuff because we love helping people walk through this, and just because we've dealt with it and we've worked with a lot of clients that have gone through similar things. So if you know, fear of success is something that maybe you're listening and that really resonates with you, just know that that's normal and that's okay. And if you have emotional barriers such as that fear of actually reaching your goal, then we'll hold your hand and walk you through that, or you know, get accountability in a healthcare professional or a close friend or a counselor that can really kind of work through those things with you.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. You know, it's kind of a fear of success, which we don't think about very much, but at least it's a positive way to frame it, you know?
Yeah. Well, then on the other hand, I guess, is fear of failure. You know, we have clients who kind of procrastinate on making these healthy choices because what if it doesn't work for them? Like so many of people, you know, so many people have tried diet after diet for 10, 20, 50 years or more. And this lifetime of dieting failure can really leave you kind of afraid and frustrated and discouraged and scared to try, you know, something new. So then when you hear of something that works for so many other people, or, you know, clients will tell us, I read all these, you know, success stories on your website and I'm excited, that could be me, but I'm nervous because like, what if it doesn't work for me? That can be scary. The exciting thing, though, is that if you work with someone who has an individualized approach, then there's not really a rate of failure because everything is being customized towards you and like looking at your health history and how you're responding to food and the changes that you're making. So again, I would encourage people just not to be afraid of the failure either, and just kind of to step out and because that's what's gonna get you to the life that you want to lead.
Okay, awesome. So you mentioned earlier that protein could increase metabolism. Mm-hmm. Any other things that you could share that increase metabolism?
Yeah, so healing your gut. I mentioned gut health, and the way that we suggest doing that is, first of all, taking those inflammatory foods out that are going to contribute to further damage in your gut. That would be step number one, and cutting back on the sugar. So the easiest way to do that is including more healthy fat and more protein. Fermented foods are great. They're usually high in this healthy bacteria that supports your gut health. So sauerkraut, kefir, kimchi, kombucha, yogurt are a few good ones. And then we recommend supplementation along with real food. Nearly everyone can benefit from supplementing with a good high quality probiotic and a glutamine supplement. And that's because I kind of mentioned that probiotics boost the good bacteria in your gut. And then glutamine is an amino acid, which is a building block of protein. And it helps to kind of rebuild and maintain the structural integrity of like the thin lining of your digestive tract. So together, this combination of probiotics and glutamine really promote this healthy intestinal lining and proper digestion by rebuilding that lining and restoring the good healthy gut bacteria, which in turn reduces inflammation. So like I think kind of the first first prong to gut health would be keeping out anything causing inflammation. And then it would be helping your body heal that inflammation. And we do that by way of high quality supplements. And then also healthy fat can help reduce that inflammation too. And then managing stress is important because your gut is really linked to your state of mind, and stress affects your gut health and stress affects your metabolism. It can slow down your metabolism when you're stressed out. And then also not letting those food sensitivities go unchecked, because that can increase inflammation and damage the intestinal tract. And then again, if your body's like constantly trying to fight something that it doesn't like, it's not going to give you energy and it's not going to support your metabolism. So the big five food allergens would be gluten, dairy, eggs, soy, and nuts. So might seem kind of obvious, but if you know you have a food allergy or sensitivity, completely avoiding that food is going to be best for your metabolism and your gut. And if you're not sure, I think it would be a really good idea to work with someone to help determine if you have any food allergies or sensitivities that can be impairing your gut health or standing in the way of your energy and metabolism weight loss goals.
And how do you guys do that at your clinic? Do you do it with elimination diet or do you do some testing?
Yeah, you know, if people get testing done, we can definitely work with that. It can be kind of beneficial to help see those red flags. The problem is a lot of the food sensitivity testing is based on what you've eaten recently. So a lot of times these test results will come back and it'll look like people will freak out and think they're sensitive to like everything. And that's just not the case. So we find that the best way to test is by completely eliminating that food and doing one food at a time. So we might start, if we kind of have some suspicions, like maybe, you know, dairy kind of causes them to have a lot of gas and maybe their migraine headaches or like seems to be on days when they're having gluten or whatever it might be, we might take out what we kind of suspect first and then see how that goes, see how they do without it. And then we'd move on to the next one and kind of work that way forward.
Okay. Interesting. I wanted to share a sad food allergen. I just,
oh no.
And maybe it's not an allergen, but you know, I've done cleanses over time and I feel like each time, I mean, I love it. I have to kind of repeat to kind of get back to a baseline. But I, you know, I was starting to get suspicious of corn, and now like I cannot eat corn chips anymore. And it's okay. But it, you know, but now that I have such a strong reaction after doing the cleanse, I realize, you know, wow, this has a huge impact on me. And I don't know. It seems like somehow corn chips are everywhere. Like if you're at parties.
Yeah.
And, you know.
And they're gluten-free. So it's kind of a nice alternative. And yeah. It's the same thing for a lot of people.
Yeah.
That would be difficult.
Yeah. It's just, you know, it's just interesting. But I mean, the good news is I have such a strong reaction now that there's like, you know, I don't want to have
it. Oh, you don't even want to.
Now that I don't want to feel so horrible. So I think, like you said, you got to take it out and then really see what it feels like. Because if it's just something you have all the time, you're like, oh, I don't know why I'm low energy. I don't know why I can't lose weight. But if you take stuff out, you realize, oof, my body really doesn't like corn chips.
Well, and I think you mentioned something really important is that now, because of you know how intense that response is, it's not even like worth it for you to eat those. And that's what a lot of people will say when they, like, dairy is a big one that's really scary for people to give up, because they're like, oh, I just can't imagine life without, you know, heavy cream and cheese. And butter, actually most people that can't do dairy can still do butter, but we have a couple clients that can't do butter. But anyway, if you know, like, if you've been trying to lose weight for like 25 years and you haven't been able to and nothing has been successful, and you cut out dairy for 3 or 4 weeks and you start losing weight and you feel awesome and like your acne goes away that you've struggled with since you were a teenager and your back pain that you have been taking meds for goes away, like if things like that happen, it's not going to be that hard for you to do. Like, we hear that from clients all the time where they're like, oh man, I was so afraid to do this. I wish I would have done this like 10 years ago because I feel amazing and I never want to have it again. Or yeah. Even like, you know, even if it's not a food sensitivity, even with things like sugar, like clients who might come to us and they're eating a bowl of ice cream every night or eating donuts every Friday morning as a treat. And then they realize, like, after giving it up for a while, sometimes they go back and kind of dabble with it. And we almost like encourage people to do that, which sounds kind of weird, but I think sometimes it's good to actually know how a food affects you. So if you mm-hmm. haven't had that bowl of ice cream for 6 months and you're feeling super deprived, I might recommend, well, maybe try having that bowl of ice cream. Like, just see how you feel, you know? And as long as it's not like, you know, setting them up for this like terrible allergic reaction or something, sometimes it's good just to see how your body responds. And then that same client will say, gosh, I had that bowl of ice cream. First of all, it wasn't even as good as I thought it was. In my head, I talked it up for weeks and thought about it and I ate it and it was terrible. And then I felt so awful. Like, I woke up the next morning and felt awful and realized it affected me for like 2 days. So it's cool because you get to start to make those connections once you really start paying attention to your body and switching over to eating more real food versus kind of the packaged processed ones that are really high in sugar. And a lot of people, again, won't realize that that's how it's making them feel or that they're feeling that way because of these foods unless they do cut them out and make some changes.
Yeah, I use that same trick, so to speak. Our cleanse we just did, there's a couple, and they were saying, oh, we can't wait. First thing we're going to have is nachos. And I said, great, you know, have the biggest plate of nachos you can possibly have, because I kind of know how that's going to go down. And it's going to, you know, be a good, rather than have one chip, you know, really have yeah. the whole nachos and really see how that makes you feel.
Yeah.
And if it works, great, but most likely.
And for most people, yeah. And even if you're not sensitive to corn, you know, for a lot of people having those kind, like, you know, usually nachos are with, you know, like some sort of processed cheese and anything that's like highly refined and full of chemicals that your body doesn't recognize will slow down your metabolism. Because what happens is it triggers the inflammatory process in your body. And when your insides are inflamed, your metabolism isn't supported because your body's trying to heal that. So, and then also eating these foods, you know, processed foods are generally pretty high in carbohydrates and in turn sugar. Eating those over time also makes you insulin resistant, which can lead to type 2 diabetes and just depletes your energy and sets you up for cravings and mood swings and excess weight. So it's really kind of like this lose situation. But, we don't realize it when we just want that instant gratification. And we do live in that society where we have everything on demand and kind of that drive-through society. So it can be really difficult in the moment. But knowing that, you know, every single choice you make, every time you eat, a meal or a snack is an opportunity to be putting foods into your body that are supporting your metabolism and your health goals and your longevity. And we don't always make the right choices, and that's okay. So I tell people don't stress about it too much. I mean, if you make a bad choice, just come back at your next meal or snack and make a better one. There's no point in dwelling on something that's already happened. And I think, you know, like I said earlier, balance is different for everyone. So I don't think this isn't about perfection. It's really just about progress.
Okay. Yeah. So we have a lot of positive things about, you know, having your protein and stabilizing your carbs and that kind of thing, having more whole foods. Those are all pretty workable and likable. One thing you said that people probably will like to hear is that you don't have people count calories. And you talked a little bit about how that doesn't work. Can you talk more about how you get people to stop counting calories and they're actually losing weight?
Yeah. So, you know, weight maintenance and energy and health is just so much more about the quality of these calories, not the quantity. It's about what your body does with calories. So we teach clients, you know, not to be counting those calories and instead to be eating real foods that keep them full, like meat and fish and eggs for protein, and for healthy fat, you know, butter, avocado, nuts and seeds, and then for carbohydrates, vegetables and fruit. And the thing is, there's no need to limit real food, because when we give our bodies what they're designed to run on, we can't really overdo it. So the problem with calorie counting is that when we calorie count, we generally eat a high amount of carbohydrates. And we kind of talked already a lot about how carbohydrates turn into sugar, and that sugar is stored as fat, and that's what causes weight gain. So when we calorie count, the reason why we eat a lot of carbohydrates is because carbohydrates are lower in calories than fat. So carbohydrates have 4 calories per gram, and fat has 9 calories per gram. So you're naturally going to pick the carbs over the fat. And carbs, just remember, carbs drive that insulin response, and insulin stores fat. So lots of carbs equals lots of fat. So basically what we tell clients to do instead of calorie counting is to focus on getting in protein, fat, and carbohydrate at every single meal and every single snack. And the goal is to eventually get to a place, and it might take a little, you know, like a few days or maybe even a week or two of kind of eating this way, because it's all about listening to your body. So when you're calorie counting, you're also not listening to your body, because once you hit your calorie, you know, maximum for the day or allotted amount, you're done. And then you're trying to like not feel this hunger because it's annoying. And it's like these hunger pains that anytime you feel that, we tell people to eat, because you want to fuel your metabolism. You don't want your body to go into starving mode and hang on to everything you get it the next time you eat. You want your body to be burning everything you get it. So if you're hungry, eat. But your goal is to be able to stay ahead of that hunger. So that's why we tell people to try to eat every 3 to 4 hours. So you can think PFC every 3, so protein, fat, and carbohydrate every few hours. Once you've been doing it for a little while, you can kind of learn how to you know, stretch it out. If you're not going to be able to eat for 4 or 5 hours, what to eat more of, what to eat less of. But generally, when people are coming to us, our clients are coming to us with this history of restrictive dieting, and in order to get back in touch with their bodies, we find that having them eat every few hours is a really good way to get their metabolism working efficiently, because their body learns to trust them. Their body's like, oh, okay, well, it seems like really consistently every 3 hours, Bridget's eating protein, fat, and carbohydrates, so I can burn this now. I can burn it off. Okay, here it comes again. So it's like you get into like this nice consistent rhythm with your body. So counting calories is really, counting calories frustrates me, because your body is super complex. And to try to oversimplify and count a single substance like calories, I think is pretty degrading. And it's just a non-effective approach. It's not sustainable, doesn't lead to long-term success because of that, because it deprives our body. So we have to eat again eventually. And then when we do, we gain weight. And we've, you know, anybody who's dieted has gone through that cycle, and it just leaves us feeling deprived and dissatisfied and hungry. So your metabolism, you know, is already slowing down. And your body just kind of works against you when you starve it. And that's why you feel tired and cranky and have a difficult time concentrating. Anyone who's dieted knows what that feels like. It's just because your body's trying to compensate for energy that it's not getting and it needs. So you not only not end up losing weight long term, but you don't feel good in the process. So it's just like this lose-lose situation. So, you know, your metabolism is not about calories. It's about getting those hormones in balance. We talked about insulin and glucagon, and it's about the way to do that is by keeping your blood sugar levels nice and stable. So that's why we recommend, you know, ditching the calorie counting and focusing on fueling your body with whole, real foods and eating so that you're not hungry, so that you're staying ahead of your hunger and you're keeping your blood sugars balanced. And another aspect of this, if I could kind of go down the hormone trail a little bit further, is there's 2 more important hormones, and those are leptin and ghrelin. And leptin is your full hormone. So it makes you feel full. And ghrelin is a hormone that mimics starvation, and it makes you feel hungry. And you know what puts these hormones out of whack tremendously is not sleeping enough. So if you haven't picked up anything so far, just leave remembering that you need to make sure you're getting enough sleep. That's what this dietitian told you.
Okay.
Which is kind of a weird thing too. A lot of people are surprised at how much we focus on making sure our clients are getting adequate sleep, because a lot of times people just think it's all about nutrition and food. And it is a lot about that, but it's also about hormonal balance. So when you're not sleeping enough, your levels of leptin, so that's the full hormone, those are lowered. And then ghrelin, your hunger hormone, is increased. So that stimulates your appetite. That mimics starvation and hunger. So that means you're going to feel hungry still, even after you eat, which of course can lead to overeating. Plus, you know, has anyone had the munchies when they didn't get enough sleep, or maybe grabbed an extra energy drink or an extra mocha latte in the afternoon the next day? you know, there's a lot of other reasons why we want to make sure we're getting enough sleep too, just to be in control and make smart choices. But even just because it messes up our hormones, it puts those hormones out of whack. I think that's important.
Okay. So are those more, you know, those hormones go out of whack even after one night of poor sleep?
Yeah. Yep. They do. Okay. The next day. Yep. So that would kind of explain why people are, and you know, if you're listening to this, maybe next time you don't get enough sleep, pay attention the next day. Like, you'll notice how you kind of have, you're kind of craving maybe things higher in carbohydrates, maybe some of those processed foods. Maybe you notice that even after you eat breakfast, like, you're still hungry for a while. And it might not be like a huge dramatic difference, but even just a slight difference, if it puts ghrelin and leptin out of balance, can really impact your metabolism.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I'm pretty good about getting my sleep, but a few nights ago I had corn chips and I had a stomach ache and I couldn't sleep. And the next day I was tired and I felt like I just was craving carbs for energy, but I guess it was my gremlin. How do I say it?
Ghrelin. Yeah.
Ghrelin. Yeah. It's really interesting. So I can just imagine, I mean, there's so many people who are chronically sleep deprived and they're going through that every single day. So.
Yeah. It's stressful for your body. And that's one thing, is just like kind of ties back into stress. You know, a lot of us just like blow off stress. Like, we're all stressed, we're all busy, no big deal, but it really is a big deal, because that stress on your body makes your body have to work a lot harder. Even like back to the alcohol, alcohol could put stress on your liver. So then your liver is just trying to detoxify. So it's hard for your body to actually focus on giving you energy, and, you know, help you with weight loss or boost your metabolism, if that's a goal of yours. Not to mention, you know, tying alcohol into sleep now, is that alcohol interferes with your sleep. It just does. And I know it can seem like that glass of wine before bed helps you fall asleep, but the problem is you're just not going to sleep as soundly.
Yeah,
I'm kind of like a biohacker, where I like to like try to figure out how things affect me. And I use a sleeping app. And it's so interesting, because I notice for sure on those nights when I have a glass of wine a little bit too close to bedtime, it definitely makes my sleep percentage go way down. Oh, and I feel it the next day. You know, you wake up and you don't feel quite as rested, even if you were in bed for, most people need between 7 and 9 hours of sleep a night. So even if you were in bed for 8 or 9 hours, you just wake up and you just don't feel as rested.
Yeah, that's a good point. And that's another hard one to ask people to mess with, is especially a lot of women love their wine and their girls' night with wine and all that stuff, or a good meal with wine.
And again, like, not to be negative Nancy, I'm not trying to cut out the alcohol completely, don't drink. But I think it's a matter of being smart. And I think, you know, having alcohol as far away from bedtime is going to be most important. So I guess I'm not saying have it with breakfast in the morning, but maybe, you know, the happy hour is probably a better idea than having that glass of wine right before you go to bed. So your body has little time to your liver has more time to metabolize it. But then also making sure you're eating along with it. That's because, you know, alcohol really has like a different effect. Just like, you know, we're all different. We all metabolize food differently. It affects everyone differently. So for some people, it can really spike your blood sugar really, really fast after consuming alcohol. And for others, it kind of spikes quickly and then it's followed by kind of a precipitous drop. Either way, you're kind of in for a ride on the blood sugar roller coaster if you consume alcohol without balancing it out. So, you know, having, and, you know, common snacks that people do have with drinks, like olives and cheese, those are great things to have with alcohol. Having a little bit of that healthy fat to help slow down the blood sugar spike that can happen from alcohol.
That makes sense. Are there any other hormones you wanted to talk about? Or are those kind of the main four?
Those are the main four. Okay. Yep. Those are the main four. Insulin, glucagon, leptin, and ghrelin.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, yeah, I got a lot of good takeaways from this. I'm sure our audience did as well. You know, I don't really specialize in weight loss and metabolism in my practice. So I would be happy to encourage people to check out your site and your resources. Tell us more about what you offer.
Yeah, thank you. We offer, we call it nutrition and fitness coaching. So we're a team of registered dietitians, and one of our dietitians is a personal trainer too. So we do fitness coaching as well. But the main thing we do is the nutrition appointments, and we do those in Minnesota in our offices where I'm right now. But we also do Skype and phone. So most of our clients meet us for appointments over Skype and the phone appointments. And we basically just help clients with whatever their goals are. We find most people are successful when they do longer coaching. So people can totally just have one or two appointments with us. We find that when people work with us for a few months, 6 months or a year, they find the most success because that accountability and troubleshooting. And a lot of times there's just a lot more to work on than people might think. You know, clients might come to us and say, I already know what I'm doing. All I need to do is just like focus on my thyroid. But then we dig deeper into it and realize that there's actually a lot of hormonal imbalance going on. There's food sensitivities. We got to work on balancing your metabolism, doing this, this, and this. So it really can be helpful to work with a coach. And then we also have something that we launched last summer that's just been super fun, and it's called our PFC Club, and it's basically a community that we kind of, the reason I created it was because after clients were done with their coaching, they were like, well, now what? You know, now I'm finished and I'm so used to having this contact with you twice a month and email support. And now what do I do? So our PFC Club membership is just, it's kind of a community where our whole team, the Healthy Simple Life team, is on there every single day. And it's a way to kind of help people get on track. We've got a book club. We've got weekly videos, weekly recipes, goodies, specials. We have this community where people can ask questions every single day of the week. And then it's fun because they also will share their own recipes. And it's a way for our clients to interact, because before this, because of HIPAA, we weren't really allowed to like give out any information or do anything like that. So if people join the club, they're able to have daily access to kind of this private supportive community, and then access to myself and the HSL coaches, and you know, get these, we do weekly challenges and weekend challenges and get the accountability stuff. So cool. Yeah, it's really neat. It's really built into this fun community of like-minded people. And it can be tough, like trying to do this in the workplace and with family members that don't understand seems to be a really big barrier for a lot of our clients. So it's just a way to really kind of connect and be part of a community where you can support one another in this journey.
Yeah, you know, I think the support that you mentioned a few times is so key. And then, what was I going to say? Just the engagement in your health. Like, I think it waxes and wanes over time a little bit. Like, sometimes you're like, oh, I'm on this project. But we always have to go back to our health. And you and I have been studying this stuff a long time. Like, I still need to, I still need to do cleanses and get tests run. It doesn't end. So to speak.
I mean, really everyone can benefit from seeing a dietitian and from nutrition coaching. I mean, even people that are just come along because like a husband who's like, I'm just here to support my wife. So they do duo coaching. It's so awesome because even though he kind of thought he didn't really have anything to work on, he does. And he feels better in the process. And he makes these changes that his wife is making. And it's just this awesome way where they're supporting one another. But then he's still improving his health, even though he didn't really think he had much to improve on. So we hear those stories all the time. And it's just so exciting because there's always ways that we can, you know, implement some of these healthy changes into our lives so that we can live, like, I just think life is about living it to the fullest and not being bogged down by sugar cravings and extra weight and, you know, compulsive eating habits and not just being confused. I mean, that's one thing we hear all the time. There's just been all these, you know, calorie counting and low fat and low carb, and where do I start? So we help people really kind of just get to the bottom of it and figure out what works for their unique biochemistry and health history, and just kind of support them in that process.
Awesome. Yeah, you're like a health coach cheerleader. I love it. I think you'd be so fun to work with. I'm like, I want to do it.
Oh, so thank great. You.
So your website again, Healthy Simple Life is your group
yep,
website.
HealthySimpleLife.com. And I'm still blogging over at dietitiancassie.com. Okay. And at HealthySimpleLife.com. So both of those are resources. We also have a store where we offer the pharmaceutical grade supplements. I was mentioning some supplements, and really we're seeing, especially in the news lately, there's just so much research that there's so many shady, ineffective supplements out there that contain a bunch of scary ingredients. So we tell people, if you're not using pharmaceutical grade, you know, don't use supplements at all, because you don't, it's just like food. You want to make sure you're putting high quality food and supplements into your body. And people don't have to get them through us, but we do offer the pharmaceutical grade ones on our website and our store as well.
Yeah, I think it's really important too. And I need to increase that education in my clinic, because I think people, you might suggest something and they think, oh, well, you know, I'll go shop around for prices. But you just, you know, you don't really know who's checking the quality of those. And I know as practitioners, mm-hmm. it's like, I don't choose the prices that, you know, certain supplements just cost more than others just because of the way they're harvested. And, you know, I don't know. On our end, we definitely try to give you the best prices we can. Some supplements that are high quality are more expensive, and some are still pretty reasonable.
Most expensive supplement is the one that doesn't work. So people are – no, seriously. I mean, people are wasting all this money at the store on all these supplements that are ineffective, and sometimes even bring them further from their goals. Like, we've found – clients will bring their supplements in and there's gluten and there's dairy and there's fillers and things that they really don't need to be putting into their body. So, you know, if price is a concern ever, I always tell people get high quality supplements and just take less of them. That's going to be better for your body and better for your goals. And, you know, when it comes to and when it comes to quality, it's not really like a you get what you pay for kind of thing either, because there's plenty of places out there that just jack up the prices on their ineffective supplements just to make them look better. So I really think what you're looking for is the pharmaceutical grade. And that's, those supplements are only available through licensed healthcare professionals because they work and they want recommendations behind them. That's why we're actually able to offer them in our online store.
And then you can get the feedback too, because there's bio individuality and not every supplement works for everybody. So if you have a practitioner, you can go and say, I'm getting this reaction. Is that normal?
Exactly. Yeah. And like, we'll take, you know, we'll actually take it back just straight from manufacturer and have it like dissected and looked at if there's ever any reaction. We've only had like one or two clients ever have a reaction to any supplements. And it wasn't because of the supplement. It was because of something else going on in their body. But I think that's also important, is to be able to, if you do have anything weird going on, to be able to take it back to the trusted source that you got it from and say, here's what happened. What are you going to do about it? And I mean, they should be able to take that back and check out what was actually in that supplement and fully refund you as well. I think that's important.
Yeah. Really cool.
Yeah.
Well, we could probably talk all day, but yeah. Thank you so much for coming on, and we'll definitely keep in touch and support your business how we can. And to our listeners, we'd love for you to subscribe if you're not already subscribed on the podcast, Women's Wellness Radio. If you're watching us on video, you can comment there too. We're always looking for guest suggestions or topic suggestions, and we like to interact with you. So interact with us. Great. Thanks
Bridget.
Again.
I love what you're doing. Really appreciate all the hard work you're putting in. Just thanks for having me on your show.
Yeah, a lot of fun. Okay, we'll talk later, Cassie. Bye-bye.
Bye.